1001 songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them with me, your host, Seth Tetley-Jones, as presented by me, your host, Seth Tetley-Jones, but selected, that's the word I was looking for, selected, not presented, by this Australian music journalist called Toby Cresswell. And if anybody wants to know who that is, Toby Cresswell, you notice I'm doing some editing there, so that not quite editing, but I'm working on my technique of bleeping my things out so that I can say who the f*** is Toby Cresswell like that. I'm not sure if it works perfectly, but you get the idea. Anyway, who Toby Cresswell is, he's... This journalist, he said, Toby Cresswell wrote his first article in 1972. Since then, he has written extensively on music and popular culture, and his work has appeared in numerous Australian and overseas publications. Overseas presumably means New Zealand. In 1985, he was appointed editor of the Rolling Stone for Australia, forming a partnership in 1987, which continued to publish the magazine until 1992. After Rolling Stone, he co-founded Terraplane, which launched Juice magazine, as well as a variety of other titles, including Monument, Australian Style, and Ain't Q. At any rate, that's who Toby Cresswell is, and he wrote this book because, as he said, this is a book of 1001 songs, and some of them are truly awful. He said that John Lennon's Imagine was really quite terrible, even though he includes it in there. But he says he hopes that you will perhaps discover gems and rediscover classics. I don't know what you get from all of that, but I get from it that he's this Australian journalist who can't help sounding like a bit of a wanker sometimes. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to bleep out that word, but anyway, he sounds like a bit of sometimes. How did that work for you? That's very hard not to do sometimes if you are a journalist. I come across like all the time here on Waiheke Radio, as you will have noticed. Firstly, this week though, we've got Simon and Garfunkel and Bridge Over Troubled Water, and this is a track from the year 1970. Bridge Over Troubled Water is one of the great statements of about modern relationships. The friendship between Simon and Garfunkel, ripped apart by ego and competing careers, and Simon's relationship with his wife, with his audience, and with his music are laid out perfectly in measured melodies, decorated by massed voices over the course of an LP. This album is the whole masterpiece of pop. Its production by Simon Garfunkel and Roy Haley is flawless. The lyrics are multidimensional, wry, and often heartbreaking. Bridge Over Troubled Water was written in Los Angeles at the same house George Harrison immortalized Blue Jay Way. Simon was listening to Swan Silverstone's recording of Oh Mary Don't You Weep and thinking about his wife Peggy. Two verses came quickly, and he presented the song to Garfunkel, who initially declined the lead vocal. Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon and Garfunkel.
Just can't be found. when you're down and out, when you're on the street, when evening falls so hard, I will comfort you. I'll take your part. Oh, when darkness comes and pain is all around, like a bridge over troubled water, I will lay me down, like a bridge over troubled water, I will lay me down.
Sail on, silver girl, sail on by. Your time has come to shine. All your dreams are on their way. See how they shine.
Simon and Garfunkel with Bridge Over Troubled Water right here on Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM. Or if you happen to be listening on that wonderful thing that they call the internet. And if you are listening on that wonderful thing which they call the internet, then you can find us at www.waihikiradio.org.nz, and there you can find us live streaming. You can also find on-demand shows and podcasts of shows and various other goodies that we keep online at www.waihikiradio.org.nz. Very, very, very excellent site. It's up there, up there with Google, actually. Up there with Google and YouTube in terms of, you know, it's basically, you know, the pinnacle of internet technology is Waiheke Radio. His website, mainly because it's got us, Waiheke Radio, broadcasting from it. I mean, technically, it's got a lot going for it in terms of it's got this radio station. Because I mean, for instance, YouTube has a lot of videos, but it doesn't live stream Waiheke Radio. Actually, I looked Waiheke Radio up on YouTube. It's got the initial broadcast, which was quite interesting. The initial broadcast, which said that this is a test frequency for Waiheke Radio, and this is we will be broadcasting a radio station on this frequency quite soon. And I think it was Country Mike or Chris or somebody like that who one of our stalwarts here at Waiheke Radio. Am I a stalwart? I've been going for a year. Anyway, next up, what we're going to go to is Lou Reed and Take a Walk on the Wild Side. The cultural impact of this song only matched by its perfection as a pop track. Lou Reed put the downtown Manhattan scene, the hustlers, the whores, the transvestites, and the desperates into the mass media, and he did it without romanticizing them. The best description of the inspiration for this track is from Reed himself on the Take No Prisoners live album. He describes, with many asides, how he ran away from the imminent success of the Velvet Underground, and while unemployed and with no prospects, was commissioned to write songs for a stage musical version of Nelson Algren's novel Walk on the Wild Side. The project faded, but Reed kept the title and wrote a talking blues about people who hung around Andy Warhol's factory. Stud actor John D'Alessandro, transvestite transsexual superstars Holly Woodlawn, Candy Darling, and Jackie Curtis. Warhol's enduring creation was to take these flowers in the dustbin and call them superstars. He glamorized outsiders and turned the notion of status on its head. Warhol's view was that the glamorous or cool eventually became everybody's. Of course, one of his first makeovers was the Velvet Underground, and Reed remained forever mostly grateful.
Excuse me. When he made the Transformer album, Reed was pretty much nobody. The Velvets were never popular. Reed's first solo album was a flop. The fact that David Bowie agreed to produce was a key factor in this recording being made at all. Bowie's production is masterful. The sweet touches in the vocal harmonies and the quick, deceptively simple arrangements are in large part due to Bowie. The hook Walk on the Wild Side, though, belongs to Herbie Flowers. It's the most famous bass line in pop music. Flowers, an old session hand, played a simple stripped-back double bass. He claims he suggested adding an electric bass part so that he could double his fee. With the electric bass counterpointing the acoustic part and this wonderful fairy story lyric, the whole song is virtually there. Now with the top 40 audience he had so long claimed he craved, Reed followed the sexy and witty Transformer with a concept album about junkies dying. So much for success. It was a fluke anyway. He deadpanned. And this is Walk on the Wild Side from Lou Reed's album Transformer. Edited, apparently. No, not edited. Produced. Who cares who edited it? Why did I even use the word edited? I'm not doing very well tonight. Produced by David Bowie, actually. But this is Lou Reed's Take a Walk on the Wild Side.
Holly came from Miami, FLA. Hitchhiked her way across USA. Plucked her eyebrows on the way. Shaved her legs and then he was a she. She says, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey honey, take a walk on the wild side. Out on the island, in the back room, she was everybody's darling. But she never lost her head, even when she was given head. She says, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls go do 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 do. Never once gave it away. Everybody had to pay and pay. A hustle here and a hustle there. New York City is the place where they said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey, Joe, take a walk on the wild side. Sugar Plum Fairy came and hit the streets, looking for soul food and a place to eat. Went to the Apollo, you should have seen him go, go, go. They said, hey, sugar, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side. All right. Ha. Jackie is just speeding away. Thought she was Jim Dean for a day. Then I guess she had to crash. Valium would have helped that bash. I said, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey, honey, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls say, doot, 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 doot.
I don't actually remember Lou Reed having quite that much treble in his vocal, but however, I'm apparently wrong there. At any rate, that was Lou Reed and Walk on the Wild Side here at Waiheke Radio, 88.3 at 107.4 FM. Next up, we got The Captain by Casey Chambers from 1999. Ostensibly country music, Casey Chambers' solo debut defined many categories. She had played in the family business, the Dead Ringer Band, however, on her own, she fits better with the alternative rock girl Jewel Sobule, or alternative country star Lucinda Williams. These songs evoke a real life as country music is supposed to, but they also have kinds of quirks that you've got to mark the arrival of the truly gifted songsmith. Songs like You Got the Car and We're All Gonna Die and Last Hard Bible have the resonance of great blues, while These Pines is wonderfully emotive and oddly personal. It's nice that, similarly, this southern kind of life is so caught up in the Nashville tradition that it sounds so stupid coming from an Australian. That's nice, Toby Cresswell. Just talk about all these songs that you're not actually going to play. I think that's because he hasn't got very much to say about this song. He's only got one more paragraph after this, after all. Speaking of odd, however, the title track, and that's The Captain, which you're about to hear, is the most un-PC song ever sung by a woman. And I would disagree with that, actually. I couldn't, though admittedly, I couldn't think of a song that was the most politically incorrect song sung by a woman. But I don't think this is, it's submissive, but not politically incorrect as such. Maybe I'm splitting hairs there. I didn't think it was terribly politically incorrect at any rate. It is the most politically incorrect song ever sung by a woman. One hopes that this extreme offer of subjugation, that I would agree with though, it's an extreme offer of subjugation, is addressed to a deity rather than a lover. But the melody is so infectious that you really want to forget the sentiment. But the marks of Chambers as a writer, she had no barriers and simply let the words come unfiltered. Her voice too reflected the honesty. Fortunately, perhaps, Chambers forgot The Captain and went on to marry someone else. And this is Casey Chambers and the Captain.
I was. I've kicked myself at times because I am mine. So I will have to learn to stand my ground. I tell them I won't be around. I move on over to your town and hide. And you be the captain, and I'll be no one. And you can carry me. Second wind, is there somewhere here to let me in? I asked. So I slammed the doors, they slammed at me. I found the place I'm meant to be. I figured out my destiny at last. You be the captain, and I'll be no one. And you can carry me away if you want. Carry me away if you want to. And you can lay low just like your father. And if I tread upon your feet, you just say so. 'Cause you're the captain.
The Captain by Casey Chambers here on Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM. And this is 1001 songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them. Right here, right now, on Waiheke Radio. We have for you next up a little song by the Pretenders called Brass in Pocket. It was released on the Pretenders' self-titled album in 1980. I have no illusions, Chrissie Hynde told NME's Chris Sailwitz shortly after the release of the Pretenders' eponymous debut. There's so much nicer way of putting self-titled album. I really wish I said that just 30 seconds ago when I said the Pretenders' self-titled album. I know how low the standards are. I'm aware of why things happen in the music business. I know why the album did so well. We got our timing right. The market was wide open for a band like ours with a girl vocalist and a solid, simple, straight-ahead rock songs. It sounds perfect on the radio, too, which is a large reason why it happened in America. And that's the exact reason why it sold 300,000 copies in California alone. I mean, why shouldn't we sell records there? Because, quite simply, it doesn't jar when it's played next to Foreigner or Styx. That said, though, I hated Brass and Pocket with a vengeance. Fucking Ada. I hated it so much that if it was in Woolworths they started playing it, I'd have to run out of the store. The Pretenders, Ada. I'll try and explain that to people who don't really understand, is that fact is I don't know. The writing credit is James Honeyman Scott and Chrissy Hind, and this is Chrissy Hind we're hearing talking here, and so I don't know really who she's complaining about when she says fucking Ada. The Pretenders were absolutely the right band at the right time. Their rightness was largely due to Hind, whose concise songcraft came out of a tomboy persona with a sultry chanteuse voice. Hind, originally from Akron, Ohio, was in London for the birth of British punk. She worked at Malcolm McLaren's sex shop, taught guitar to Johnny Rotten, palled around with Clash's Mick Jones and the superstar rock journalist Nick Kent. I arrived in England naively, thinking that I'd bump into Mark Bolan or Jeff Beck on every street corner, she said. All I had was a couple of $100 and there were albums by Iggy Pop and Lou Reed, and of course it was instant dissolution. I was living in these really cheap, scuzzy hotels, having to smell leather handbags in one of those sucker tourist markets on Oxford Street and modelling at St. Martin's School of Art. And like no one knew what the hell I was talking about when I mentioned the Stooges or Lou Reed. Once Hind had her band together, James Honeyman Scott on guitar, Pete Farndon on bass, and drummer Martin Chambers, Nick Lowe spent a day in the studio recording a single. The A-side, a cover of an obscure Kink song, Stop Your Sobbing, was an instant hit. Hind's songs were carefully observed vignettes of life made spectacular by Honeyman Scott's guitars and Hind's elegantly detached delivery. Hind was sometimes bitchy, erotic, or wistful, told it like it was in the spirit of punk, but without the alienated trappings. The album cruised from one hook to another. Producer Chris Thomas specialized in taking melodic garage bands, including the Sex Pistols, and casting their vignettes as epics. Under pressure to follow up the hits, each of the first three Pretenders 45s was a smash hit. Hind's entire repertoire went onto the record. Meanwhile, the group was finding its feet after fewer than a dozen shows. All these elements cooked the Pretenders into one of the best pop albums of all time. The Pretenders had a perfect sound. They had the 60s pop moves and the punk rock credibility, unlike most of the other punk groups they could play. Honeyman Scott's guitar parts bristled with ideas, sparkling melodic touches that complemented Hind's prickly lyrics. Chambers and Farndon put a soulful bedrock under Hind, whether she was bitter or wist. As in the case of With Brass and Pocket, which secured their place at the top of the tree. "We're all on £50 a week," she said when quizzed about her instant sardine. "I've got to leave my flat tomorrow and move in with a friend. I've got no bank account, no publisher, no management. At least, nothing signed. It's all on a trust basis. I'm not really concerned with whether I'm being ripped off. I'm in too much of a fizzy. I'm too busy writing songs." This is The Pretenders and Brass and Pocket.
got this in pocket. Got that though. I'm gonna use it. Intention. Got motion, restrained emotion. I've been diving, detailed leaning. No reason, just seems so pleasing. Gonna make you, make you, make you notice. Gonna use my arms, gonna use my legs, gonna use my style, gonna use my sidestep.
Was The Pretenders and Brass in Pocket. And next, I should have been... Should have thought about that a little more carefully, because I was too busy reading about the Nullarbor Plain, where Casey Chambers grew up, which is a treeless plain in South Australia, and it is a desert south of the Great Victoria Desert, and it is geologically the world's largest individual slab of limestone. I just thought I needed to share that with you before moving on to the next track, which is Bruce Springsteen and Highway Patrolman. No One in 1982, and if I look up there, it says that it was released on Nebraska, which was released on 1982. And this is Bruce Springsteen's Highway Patrolman, and it says No One in 1982 is reported to have heard Nebraska and announced, "I have heard the future of folk music!" No one, it has to be said, was looking for the future of folk music. Certainly not from Bruce Springsteen. Viewed by the industry as career suicide and shunned by most of his fans, Nebraska is a high point in Bruce Springsteen's career. It has inspired one classic film, The Indian Runner, and a sublime cover version by Johnny Cash, Johnny 99, amongst many other tributes. Nebraska has survived the slings and arrows of fashion. It has been consistently magnificent. Although the 80s album The River had been Springsteen's strongest work to date, his personal life was a mess. He was depressed and isolated. He was also picking up on the pall that had fallen over America as a consequence of the recession and
Reaganomics. I'm not quite sure what Reaganomics are, but I'm sure that some of you do, because it sounds like one of those things that you will, if you know, that was at some point popular culture, but it kind of went over my head. Springsteen was reading Flannery O'Connor and watching films about the American soul. Louis Malle's Atlantic City, Terrace Malick's Badlands, John Huston's Wise Blood and True Confessions, written by Joan Didion and John Gregory Dunn. In January 1982, at home alone with his tape recorder, he recorded Nebraska in less than 3 hours. The same sessions also produced the songs Born in the USA and Pink Cadillac. With minimal backing over a spare vocal and guitar, this was a bleak album with none of the redemptive moments Springsteen has previously supplied. Moreover, the songs failed to respond to the band, and in the end it was the home recordings that became Nebraska. 50 years previously, Ellen Lomax had taken primitive tape recorders into the depths of America and returned with songs that became the billion-dollar rock and roll business and superstar brands, of which Bruce Springsteen was the apotheosis. Now in his bedroom, Springsteen reversed the journey. Springsteen was looking at the core of his own beliefs and family. There are tales like used cars, and especially my father's house, which came literally from that experience. From there, he was able to extrapolate more generally. The moral dilemma of family has rarely been as well expressed as on Highway Patrolman. Nihilism has rarely been better expressed as on the album's final cut, Reason to Believe, which opens with a vignette of a man poking a dog's carcass by the side of the highway, hoping that the animal will come back to life. When I wrote Nebraska, I found the record center. The songs tapped into white gospel and early Appalachian music, as well as the blues. In small detail, the slow twirling of a baton, the twisting of a ring on a finger. They had found their character. That's what Springsteen wrote in his book, which he called Songs. If there's a time that runs through the record, it's a thin line between stability and that moment when time stops and everything goes black. When things that connect you to your world, your job, your family, your friends, your faith, the love and grace in your heart fail you. I wanted the music to feel like a waking dream, and the record to move like poetry. I wanted the blood on it to feel destined and fateful. This is Bruce Springsteen and Highway Patrolman.
My name is Joe Robert. I work for the state. I'm a sergeant out of Burnville, barracks number 8. I always done an honest job, as honest as I could. I got a brother named Frankie, and Frankie ain't no good. Now ever since we was young kids, it's been the same come down. Frankie's in trouble downtown. Well, if it was any other man, I'd put him straight away. But when it's your brother, sometimes you look the other way. Yeah, me and Frankie laughing and drinking. Nothing feels better than blood on blood. Taking turns dancing with Maria as a band played Night of the Johnstown Flood. I catch 'em when
like any brother would. Man turns his back on his family, well, he just ain't no good. Well, Frankie went in the army back in 1965. I got a farm to firm, settled down to Maria for my wife. But then wheat prices kept on dropping, till it was like we were getting robbed. Frankie came home in 68, and me, I took this job. Yeah, we're laughing and drinking. Nothing feels better than blood on blood. Taking turns dancing with Maria as the band played Night of the Johnstown Flood. I catch him when he strays, teach him how to walk that line. Man turned his back on his family, he ain't no friend of mine. Well, the night was like any other, but I got a call about quarter to nine. There was trouble in a root house out on the Michigan line. There was a kid lying on the floor looking bad, bleeding hard from his head. A girl crying at a table, and it was Frankie said. Well, I went out and I jumped in my car, and I hit the lights. Well, I must have done 110 through Michigan County that night. It was out at the crossroads, down round Willow Bank. Seen a Buick with a high plate, behind the wheel was Frank. Well, I chased him through them county roads, till a sign said Canadian border 5 miles from here. Pulled over the side of the highway and watched his taillights disappear. Me and Frankie laughing and drinking. Nothing feels better than blood on blood. Taking turns dancing with Marie as the band plays Night of the Johnstown Flood. Catch him when he streams, like any brother would. Man turns his back on his family, but he just ain't no good.
That was Bruce Springsteen and Highway Patrolman here on Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM, also broadcasting live streaming thing on www.waihikiradio.org.nz. This is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them. Next up, we've got Comfortably Numb by Pink Floyd. Pretty much the last significant gasp from Pink Floyd, The Wall, was, like so much of Floyd's work, on the brink of insanity. Roger Waters conceived the album in an epiphany of self-hatred and contempt for his audience while on stage. He spat on the fan, and then with this huge double album was gradually... gradually vomited out. That double album, of course, being The Wall, the tale of a rock star whose fame had sent him mad. Also, an essay on alienation. Walter had his demons, troubled childhood, father who died in World War II, and thought the rest of the group were not much better. He fired keyboard player Rick Wright during the sessions for his album, and producer Bob Ezrin owed his job to the inability to keep some peace between Waters and guitarist Dave Gilmour. Insanity had dogged the band since it lost its founder, Sid Barrett, but Waters also empathized on a couple of occasions in my life where I had felt myself approaching mental breakdown. "It has felt like delirium," he said. As the group were facing bankruptcy at the time, there was a pressing need for a new album, so whoever had the idea was bound to get a green light. But there were things about it where I thought, "Oh no! Here we go again! It's all about the war! It's all about his mother, all about his father being lost. I'd hoped we could get through all this and eventually he'd deal with some other stuff, but he had a fixation." Keyboard player Rick Wright told Mojo, "Every song was written in the same tempo, the same key, the same everything. Possibly, if we're not in this financial situation, we might have said, 'We don't like these songs,' and things might have been different. But Roger had this material, and Dave and I didn't have any, so we'll do it." Initially, I had two images of a building, a wall across the stage, and of the sadomasochistic relationship between audience and a band. The idea of an audience being bombed and the ones being blown to pieces applauding the loudest because they are the center of the action, even as victims, said Waters. "There is something macabre and worrying about this relationship that we will provide a PA system so loud that it can damage you and that will fight to sit... that you will fight to sit right in front of it so that you can be damaged as much as possible, which is the idea of Pink metamorphorized into a Nazi demagogue began to generate from. Ezrin constructed a scenario from the songs at the beginning of the project around which the album could be built. As a part of this process, Gilmour also contributed ideas while the others sat on the sidelines. The album's centerpiece is the last real collaboration between Gilmour and Waters' Comfortably Numb. Things like Comfortably Numb are really the last embers of Roger and my ability to work collaboratively together. My music, his words," Gilmour told Mojo. "I had the basic part of the music done. Rye gave Roger bits of music, he wrote some words, he came in and said, 'I want to sing this line here. Can we extend this by so many bars so I can do that?' So I said, 'Okay, I'll put something in there.' Comfortably Numb started off as a demo of Dave's, a piece in D with a lovely soaring chorus and a very moody verse," said Ezrin. As first, Roger had not planned to include any of Dave's material, but we had things that needed filling in, so I fought for the song and insisted that Roger work on it. My recollection is that he did so grudgingly, but he did it. It came back with the spoken word verse and lyric in the chorus that, to me, still stands out as one of the greatest ever written, and the marriage of that lyric and Dave's melodies and emotionally spectacular sorrow every solo every time I hear that song. I get goosebumps." This is Pink Floyd and Comfortably Numb.
Is there anyone home? Come on, come on down. I hear you feeling down. Well, I can ease your pain, get you on your feet again. Relax, relax, relax. I need some information first. Just the basic facts. Show me where it hurts.
I'm sorry, I was in the middle of tearing up a piece of paper. But I'm back now, and that was Pink Floyd and Comfortably Numb here on Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM. And I am afraid to say that we are steadily approaching the top of the hour, and I fear there is not time for another song. And as such, I would like to remind you that this very show, will be repeated on Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock, and I will be back here to do another show with even more songs, and those songs might include the Beatles and Ron Wood and David Crosby and Frank Zappa and Neil Young and possibly even Bob Dylan and people like that, and those are treats that you can look forward to next week, Monday, 8 p.m. on Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4.